How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
The one question that I hate getting is like, oh my God, was Adam so mad when you electrocuted him?
Yeah, feel like, that's another one.
I don't like that question because there's so much story to it.
Welcome, MythFits.
MythFits, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am Tori Belacci.
I'm Carrie Byron, and today is going to be a good time. We've got some interesting things to talk about.
Have you seen the myth that's going around right now? I don't know if it's a myth or not. It's the death of MTV. MTV's over. They've pulled the plug.
Like New Year's Day. MTV shuts down, and there's this like goofy AI video of the lights going dark on the unplugged set and Kurt Loder at the desk, and he looks sad and the lights go out. From what I understand, it's like parts of MTV are shutting down, but it's not like MTV, the corporation, is completely shut out. But
so it is a myth. It's not true.
It's not entirely true, but when was the last time you watched MTV?
Now, for our listeners, if you were born in the 70s or 80s, you knew a different MTV. They actually played music videos. Like, that was all they did. It was 24 hours of music videos. And then they slowly started bringing in the news, and then they started bringing in TV shows. And then all of a sudden it was like Jersey Shore and ridiculousness.
There was no music anymore.
They got rid of all the music videos, the best part of it. And it just became, but by the end, it basically became Rod Dyrdek's channel. Like, if you looked at the lineup, it was like ridiculousness every hour. It was like, next show, next block.
I have such nostalgia for the early MTV days, though. Like, I would come home after school. You know, I was a latchkey kid, so I'd come home. I'm the adult in the house, and I'm like a third grader. So I would turn on MTV to make the house full of noise, and it just was continually on all day. So, like, even though the every 10 videos, they'd probably start playing the same set over and over. Like, I was glued to it. Like, I feel like it really informed my early upcome. I think that's why I'm really excited about the guest that we have on today, because a little bit later, we are going to talk to one of the, I mean, legends of early MTV. I had the chance to meet Thomas Dolby a long time ago. I think it was like maybe 2015-ish. I was doing a talk as part of a series, and he was one of the other speakers. And I really hit it off.
That's how you know Thomas Dolby. I'm so jealous. Everybody I told that we were having him on the podcast, they were just like freaking out.
He's so cool. It was one of those kind of, like, all the speakers that they had were really, really cool. They had like astronauts and I think Reed Timmer was there, and Thomas Dolby and Homer Hickam, and like just all of these interesting people. And we all were just kind of like,
and Carrie Byron.
We were all sitting around at the bar afterwards, kind of telling war stories or whatever. And, you know,
what kind of war stories are you telling? Well, what are you talking about, Carrie?
Industry war stories.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was talking to Thomas Dolby. I'm like, I actually don't like doing these talks that much because I'm a bit of an introvert. I don't really get a big vibe off the audience. And he's like, oh, I'm an introvert. I'm like, come on, you're a rock star.
For the fans that know who Thomas Dolby is, I mean, it's like he was part of the British pop scene in the 80s and then just blew up like early 80s. But he one of his most famous song would be She Blinded Me with Science. And we actually used that song for a promo on Mythbusters. And I remember seeing that promo and hearing that song. We're like, why can't we have this song be the theme to Mythbusters. Like, it makes perfect sense and it's so good. But I think it was because Discovery didn't want to pay the royalties of having every episode you have to pay for that music right. The one thing about Mythbusters theme song is it's not catchy. It doesn't make any sense. It's like,
can you hum it right now?
Like, it literally doesn't make sense.
I wish that they could have remade it in the way, like, you know how Primus does the beginning of South Park? If we had somebody like that to do us a good theme song, how awesome would that have been?
Well, there was a moment back in, like, when was it? It was like right in the middle of Mythbusters' life, like in the, like, right when we were peaking, and they were like, we're going to redo the theme. We have the Dandy Warhols. They're going to come up with a new theme for us. And so they did, but then they found out how much it was going to cost to put it on each episode. And they're like, okay, let's try this. Why don't you guys redo the existing Mythbusters theme song? And so they did. And so it, like, sounded nicer. It sounded like more, like, professional. But I remember talking to them and they were like, the song doesn't make sense. It doesn't follow musical rules. Like, they were like, what? They couldn't figure out the theme song.
I was scrolling through Instagram and there's this guy who takes, like, parents that want to give their kids advice and makes it metal. Uh-huh. And I want him to redo our theme song. This is Anthony Vincent Official.
Make one for my kid's homework, please, so I can annoy him until he does it. Hey, kid, you're not doing your homework?
What do you think this is, a democracy? Not in this house. Oh, it's boring. Awesome. You'd rather play games? Well, life's not a game, kid. There's no easy way out of this until your homework. You can't get out of that.
So I feel like we should have gotten to come redo the Mythbusters theme song. I reached out to him and I said, is there any way you could make it metal? And he's like, you can make anything metal, but then crickets. So I don't think
he could. Oh my gosh. Wait, for Mythfits podcast? We're going to have him do our...
No, I was a Mythbusters theme song.
Oh,
I hated
Mythbusters.
Yeah, I wanted
We'll leave that one, like, leave that song there. You know what would be cool? Is to get him to do a metal themed song for our podcast. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to get on the... you know what? We just mentioned him on the podcast. We'll forward this to him and tag him and see if maybe he'll want to do us a solid.
Even just like a special one. Just like a special episode. You know what? It's crazy. Talking about music and Thomas Dolby, because he was so cutting edge with technology in his music making. AI, I feel like, is just, it's weird how AI is changing the music industry. And I heard recently that there was this country song that actually charted and it was completely AI.
I actually would love to ask Thomas about this, because one thing I know about that man is he's on the cutting edge of everything tech music. Like, he's probably got some really good insight into where the world of music is going. So coming up next on Mythfits, let's get into it with Thomas Dolby.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, Mythfits. As promised, we have a very special treat for you today. We are talking to the legend, Thomas Dolby, about his life, career, and just in general. I feel like there's a lot of Mythfits out there that are also crossover big fans of yours. So thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I've always felt there was a strong, crossover to some of your audience, Gary.
Dude, I just want to say I am such a huge fan. I mean, being a kid of the 80s, your music was like a soundtrack to my life. And, you know, every time I hear those songs come on, it's just like it brings me back to the childhood. And it's just it's an honor to meet you right now.
Likewise.
We were just joking about the fact that I have always hated the title sequence to MythBusters. It's just like, it's not catchy. And I always really wish that we just licensed your song. She Blinded Me with Science seems like a much better song for us for our opener. But then it sounds like it was all about me, so maybe not.
It was actually the theme for the pilot of The Big Bang Theory. And then they changed it for the actual series. And I mean, if they just kept it, I probably wouldn't be sitting here.
And that's probably the same with us. We couldn't afford it.
I think we licensed it for like one promo at one point.
Yeah, we did. It was an ad that we did, and Jamie and Adam they were able to license it for that one ad, and we were like, oh my god, this would be the perfect theme song for us, and they're like, yeah, it's not going to happen.
My favorite use of it recently was in a show called The Great, which is about Alexandra and Peter, mm-hmm. and he takes her poodle and goes to the balcony and throws it off the balcony, and she's completely shocked, and a parachute opens, and he goes, science, and they run the end titles. And it's great when people license your song and you don't know how it's going to be used in context, so you sort of vaguely watch the series and you know at some point it's going to come on. You know, the other cool one was in, I knew it had been licensed for Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
The Jesse Plemons character is like sneaking up on the lab at the end and his phone goes off and it's his ringtone.
Since you were a kid, you wanted to be a rock star.
Not really. No, I don't think I ever wanted that, actually. I wanted to be a writer and a filmmaker and, yes, a musician. But it wasn't really the stardom and the attention that I wanted. I was always, very introverted, a bit of a wallflower, very ignorable, as a kid. And I don't think that's what I was craving, actually. I am an exhibitionist, you know. I like the idea of doing stuff that people are going to be awed by. And they go, wow, that Dolby, you know. But it's not the other trappings of rock stardom. That was not really what I was looking for.
But you say you didn't want to be a rock star, but you became one, an international one. Like, at what moment did you realize it was happening? Like, was there a moment you're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm a huge star now? And how did you deal with that?
The thing is, I was in Belgium, in Brussels, beginning my second album, when suddenly the first album took off in the US. And they said, well, how soon can you get over here? And I said, well, you know, twist my arm.
Oh, my God.
So, awesome. So I flew to Los Angeles. And it was one of those torrential, monsoon downpours in Los Angeles. And I was sick as a dog. I had mononucleosis. And the doctor had told me not to fly. But, you know, destiny waits for no man.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I remember, you know, being picked up at the airport in this torrential downpour in this fleet of limos from Capitol Records with all the people that had discovered me, you know, all my new friends. And they took me straight to a live TV show called MV3. And I was miming to my song and getting the words wrong because I was so sick. And also it was like the 12-inch version of the song, which had, you know, everything was jumbled up. And it was a catastrophe. And afterwards they said, yeah, we thought we'd go out in the town, you know, we maybe hit the Roxy and then the Rainbow Room and Carlos and Charles and go, you know, I've actually made my own plans. Thank you very much. And I said, oh, here, you want to use the phone? We can drop you off, you know, if you like. So I whip out my Filofax, remember them.
Yes.
And I've got one number in Los Angeles and it's Michael Jackson.
I love the story.
Who happened to give it to me. We stood by the water cooler outside a video editing studio in Soho, London.
Oh,
he was editing
God.
Billie Jean. I was editing She Blinded Me with Science. And he said, oh, you should come and see me if you're ever in LA. And he gave me his number. So I called the number thinking I'll get a service. Right. And this little voice goes, hello. And he said, where are you? And I said, Burbank. And he said, you want to come over and play tonight? And he said, no, next year, silly. So I ended up going to the Jackson Mansion, you know, like in this torrential downpour. And I spent a wonderful evening there, you know, hanging out, talking to Michael about music and MTV and synclaviers and payola and stuff like that.
Dude, I like, are you just like sitting there going, what is my life right now?
Oh, it's just, I mean, it's fantastic, you know. So, I mean, I wouldn't have swapped those kinds of experiences for anything.
Thomas, you've been able to watch music change and the music industry just completely change from decade to decade. Are you excited about the direction it has now, or are you reminiscent for the old days? How are you feeling about current technology?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, technology changes our lives generation to generation and year to year and, you know, week to week, rev to rev. And you can't fight that. And so I think that the reaction that a lot of people have is, ooh, you know, it's going to, what if, you know, what if AI is going to take jobs away? I just can't, I can't think like that. I see a new technology and I'm instantly thinking, well, what can I do with it creatively that wasn't possible before? So I'm very much sort of glass half full. So, you know, if you think back to synthesizers, drum machines, sampling, MTV, you know, video games, home studio recording, ringtones, you name it. The moment it shows up there, I'm excited by the idea of being one of the first people to show the world what you could maybe do with it, right?
That's awesome.
So, I mean, I think, for example, with AI right now, I mean, I'm finding incredible uses for AI in the work that I do. I'm also a teacher, you know, I'm a professor of music at Johns Hopkins, and it's a nightmare for teachers because who the hell knows how these students did their assignments, you know?
Right.
And, you know, if you ever stop, find yourself thinking, well, but it'll never really replace the human element. Well, just wait till next week, you know, when the next rev
totally
comes out. So from an educational standpoint, it's disturbing. And the laziness that maybe it encourages is disturbing. But I mean, that's an ongoing thing. I mean, long before AI, my students could take shortcuts, you know, and I would say, no, but I'm going to take those shortcuts away from you. I'm going to lock you in a room like MacGyver with a carrot and a piece of copper wire and say, you know, figure out how to get yourself out of here.
Right.
Because that's how you draw on your own ingenuity and creativity. And it's also how you find your own voice. So, you know, music technology has meant that tens of millions of people can make an album, you know, on their laptop or on their phone and put it up on SoundCloud or YouTube or whatever. Great. But the problem is, you know, it's now there's this massive ocean of very similar sounding stuff. You know, how do you separate yourself from that? So the challenge that I have for my students is to sort of say, yeah, but how are you going to find your own voice in the midst of all of that? But in a weird way, it's like when I started out, I would listen to the radio, you know, Radio One in England, and the pop charts sounded like mostly crap to me. So I go, well, how am I going to rise above that level? It's like most of the stuff out there is mediocre. How am I going to find a way to be special? So in some ways, it's no different.
I'm not worried about AI and music. I honestly think that, I mean, AI that doesn't solve a problem, I think is going to go away. And we don't have a problem of art and artists making art. Like, that's something that is the human experience. Like, I think you need the blood, sweat, tears, and experience in art to really be good. I don't look at slop and think I'm inspired. It's just, you know, unless it's like some sort of message that can bring about emotion, it's just, it doesn't touch me. So I think that's going to slowly go away. We're going to find AI that's successful if it solves problem. I want AI to do my laundry. I don't want it to do my paintings. You know what I'm saying? I do love this. So Tori, I don't know if you know this, but like a couple years ago, Thomas took me to an AR/VR convention. And it was like early games with headsets. And somewhere there's film of it. Do you have film of this? We put on these headsets and we were being attacked by zombies. And at the time, it was probably not even that realistic. But for me, I was screaming and just like, it was crazy to me. And at this point now, I think I would laugh at the realism that I was seeing within these. You know, the headset, but it was so cool to see you walk around and kind of cherry pick the different technologies that you were going to bring back to your students and see how you could incorporate teaching the new technology into something that's just so classical.
And it gives them something different, I think. I mean, you know, I teach in a conservatory, so they get the benefit of 200-300 years of, you know, musical rules.
Yeah.
But I give them a different, sort of perspective on it, really, in terms of individuality. You know, it's like that, you know, that the more technology levels the playing field for millions of people, the harder it's going to be to really stand out. But you absolutely have to do that, I think. And I think for them to be able to make a living, you know, as musicians, they're going to have to be very crafty about that.
So speaking of AI, I wanted to show you this clip and get your take on it. It's the CEO of Sono, which is a AI music making platform. And this is what he had to say about playing music and playing instruments.
It's not really enjoyable to make music now.
Why'd you say that?
It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of practice. You need to get really good at an instrument or really good at a piece of production software. I think the majority of people don't enjoy the majority of the time they spend making music.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, it's a survival course, you know, so you need stamina and determination to do anything well, you know, is the first thing. So he's got a company that's selling software, and he's saying it's fun.
It's an AI music making platform, but he's basically saying it's too hard to play instruments. Nobody wants to learn how to play an instrument. That's hard.
You know, I don't know the whole context of it, but I would say this. So, you know, we saw a flash of some music software there. When I started out in the industry, if I was lucky enough to go into a recording studio, I'd have a sound engineer there with all the knobs, and I'd say to him, okay, I want this part to really sparkle. This bit is a bit sort of darker and like a sort of thicker texture here. And he would go, okay, I'm going to add 5K at 2 dB. And I don't need to know those numbers or which knob to go for. He does that, right?
Right.
So then they gave us technology that would put that recording studio in a piece of software on our laptop. So everybody said, great, now I don't need to go in the recording studio. I can do it all in my back room. Yeah. So what I get on my screen is all of those knobs and sliders and all of those numbers. And now I've got to be not only the artist, I've got to be the sound engineer as well.
Wow.
Well, a lot of, you know, I can do that because I was a sound engineer professionally before I ever worked as an artist. But a lot of people can't. They don't have that ability to sort of, you know, juggle the left brain and right brain with what they're doing. So in a way, if you say to an AI, I'd like that to be a bit more sparkly, or what would it sound like if the Grateful Dead rewrote this chord sequence? Or, you know, in some ways you could argue it's a more natural way to interact with technology than just using a sort of decades old user interface like a, you know, recording console and making cheap software that replicates it on a computer. So I'm hopeful like that. You know, I mean, I think that we're going to start, you know, at the moment when you create stuff with AI, you give it a prompt and you get like a short clip back, which used up your 12 units or whatever. And if you don't like that, you give it a new prompt and you get another 12-second clip, right? But it's going to get more refined. So you sort of get the best of both worlds where you can actually direct it, you know, the way if a good film director is working with an actor, they don't say, right, open the door, hit that mark, say your line and be angry. Right. A good director will explain, help the actor understand where they came from, what's in their head, where they are on the arc of the story, and will find ways to enhance the actor's natural instinct to get them to that place where it comes out of their mouth naturally. Right. So I think that eventually that stuff will get folded into AI and it's going to get better and better. And, you know, there'll be a few corpses along the way, I'm sure.
Ever the optimist, Thomas. I love that.
But I'm using it a lot. And, you know, my next project is actually a symphony that I'm working on, and it's called Requiem for the 80s.
Really?
And it's like the dark side of the 80s.
Ooh.
Not just my music, but all the stuff that I really liked,
that
all sort of
awesome.
Mashed together. And so, you know, ways I use AI. So, all right, you know, ChatGPT, iconic 80s songs that includes a lyric about rain, and it starts popping up. Purple Rain, Red Rain.
Annie Lennox,
here comes the rain again. And obviously the titles, but then as you drill down to the lyrics, it starts matching up lyrics that you never thought of. From the middle eight of a Police song, there's this, and you see this narrative throughput start to match up. And then I go, well, which of those are in the same key and tempo? Well, actually, Sledgehammer and Running Up That Hill are both in E minor at 114 beats per minute. I go, oh, wow, I could actually, I go to the keyboard and I can actually, so it's prompting me as well as I'm prompting it.
That's awesome.
I mean, I think it's like anything else. A hammer in the right hand can either be a tool or a weapon. We can make AI whatever.
Wow, that's deep, Gary.
I just came up with that.
I know. Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Being somebody from so many different creative aspects, how do you stay inspired? Like, what do you do that keeps you inspired to keep creating?
Yeah, really good question. Well, you know, I don't like pushing a rope. So if I was restricted to just making albums and going on tour, then I would have burned out a long time ago. So it keeps me fresh if I haven't done that for a couple of years and I come back to it. The fact that the whole industry changes and has been evolving and pivoting so much, you know, in the last few decades, I try and use that as an inspiration. So for example, the last album that I did, which was A Map of the Floating City, and when I started making that, I thought, well, the problem is nobody's buying albums anymore. You know, what am I doing? But I thought, well, they are playing video games and they are going online. So I created a video game which you had to play in order to earn the downloads for the songs from the album.
I'd
done music for video games before, but I'd never actually created a video game. And I'm not really a gamer. But I put a little team together of people mostly moonlighting from their day jobs. I think one of the programmers actually worked for a credit card company, and he was in a booth hoping his boss wouldn't see that he was actually spending his days
making
a game for me. And it was an online multi-user game, and it was this sort of sci-fi fantasy. I didn't really have a plan for it when I started out, but you know, the fans would actually come up with their own conspiracy theories, and I would lurk around the forums, and if something seemed like a good idea, then the next week the Floating City News would publish it, and it became the truth. This worked like a charm, actually, up till the final chapter of the whole thing, when I made a rookie mistake. And people, you know, loved the game. It's free. I had, you know, several thousand people playing it. And I was creating a document one night in Word, and I hit upload, and then realized I'd accidentally uploaded the rough draft from the day before. And this had all these errors in it that really screwed everything up. So
oh,
there
no.
was an absolute riot within the game. And, you know, they'd been good as gold up to then, you know. And I don't think people knew that I was really involved in the game. They thought I'd outsourced it to some third-party company.
It's creating chaos.
I had these chat rooms with these, you know, these curses scrolling by all these people that sort of saying, how could they possibly do this to us and all the rest of it?
Brilliant.
And it was like, thum.
So what advice would you give somebody who's just starting out, who loves music, who wants to make music? What advice would you give them?
I think don't download the latest AI, you know, make your own song software.
Yeah.
I think that's going to tend to make you sound like everybody else. You know, for a start, it's sort of based on other things. It's like, you know, what happens if Drake and, you know, Billy put a song together and she sang it and he wrote the lyrics and jing, oh, fantastic. You know, problem is 10,000 other people had the same idea at the same moment. You know? So I wouldn't do that. I would get an instrument, you know, an instrument you fancy that you can afford or you can borrow from some, you know, dying uncle or something like that. And go look at YouTube videos, of which there will be 1,000, you know, for that instrument, and pick up tips, you know, find somebody you like and just learn it off YouTube. And then find some friends to do the same thing and jam. You know, I think that's probably the best way to go. I don't think you need technology. And I actually think that real instruments are going to tend to send you down a more interesting path. I'd say don't touch the technology until you've actually got something worth recording.
I mean, isn't it true that you can, like, most songs are based off of just a few chords? Like, you can learn a few chords and play almost any song.
You've seen that guy on YouTube as well who goes,
you only need to know these four chords. And yeah,
I've seen my daughter do it a couple of times where she's playing a song. I'm like, is it that song? Wait, is it that song? No, wait, is it that song?
And there was this famous thing when Ed Sheeran was in court and he sort of said, you know, well, any song in the world, I can play you any song in the world with four songs, with four chords. I wished I'd been there actually and pitching one of mine. That would have confused him.
Yes.
Well, Thomas, thank you for letting us be a part of your day, because this has been really, really fun to catch up with you.
Oh my gosh. So nice to meet you.
You've got a million great stories, a million. I think everybody needs to pick up your book, Speed of Sound, and of course, Prevailing Wind, your latest one. And where else can we find you out on the internet?
On Spotify, you know, on YouTube. Unfortunately, on YouTube, you know, the majority of what you'll see is people's iPhone clips from concerts, which sort of sound horrible. That's one thing I'm a bit sad about, really, but not much you can do to prevent that. But yeah, no, I mean, catch up. I did, over the last month, you know, KCRW, the Santa Monica station, which is, you know, also on the internet and so on, I was their resident DJ for the month of December, and I did some sets on there.
Oh, cool.
That you can go download and listen to at kcrw.com. And the most recent of them that just came out a few days ago, I call Side 2, and it's sort of deep cuts, my favorite deep cuts from my own albums that people probably don't know about. And they're mostly more mellow, you know, more atmospheric. But if all you know is She Blinded Me With Science, you should definitely go listen to that and discover the whole other side of me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
and
thank
with that,
you.
Mythfits, we'll see you in a minute.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. That, I love that guy so much. He's
oh, my
so
God.
Awesome. I mean, I love that he was telling some of his fun stories. Like, I highly recommend his book. Speed of Sound is really, really great. And he gets into more details on some of those stories that we heard from him. Like, I mean, just in general, the fact that, like, he's met all of these iconic people and was in the time of MTV during its heyday. Like, he was on top of the Berlin Wall in 89.
Yeah, no, it's wild.
Insane.
And Live Aid.
Like, I think they said he was being lowered down on cables playing guitar. Like, it's just what an incredible life. So many great stories.
Yeah, and he's just it's so interesting, his career path and kind of how he transitioned out of music into technology. And he's just like an all around interesting creator. You know, it'd be awesome is if we could get him, Thomas Dolby, the Thomas Dolby, to do our Mythfits podcast theme song. You think
I don't think
do
we
that?
Can afford him.
I don't think we can either, but maybe he'll do us a favor.
All right. So it is that time of the podcast when we need a fan question. You got anything for us?
Our favorite. Yes. All right, Carrie, we have a fan question from Paul.
Hey guys, I'm Paul from Madison, Wisconsin, and I have so many questions, like, how does Carrie age so well? But mostly, I want to know, what's the one question you guys hate just getting over and over again? Thanks.
How do I age so well? Good lighting. Just good lighting. I'm a mess when you see me up close. Full Monet. Get up close,
Carrie,
bunch of dots.
Get out of here. You look great. Get out of here.
So Tori, what's the one question that you hate getting that we get constantly?
It's not that I hate it, because I never hate any fan coming up and asking a question. It's just like the one that I get constantly. It's, what was your favorite explosion?
What's your favorite myth?
What was your favorite myth? Yeah, that's probably it.
Like, I kind of forget. Like, I'll go back and look at episodes and be like, oh yeah, we did that too. So like my answer kind of is never the same for that question. But the one question that I hate getting is like, oh my God, was Adam so mad when you electrocuted him?
That's another one.
I don't like that question because there's so much story to it and it was edited so we look like the villains in that one. I don't want to explain it anymore.
that's a good, that's one of those where you're just like, ah, man, I still kind of feel bad. A lot of time has passed, so I don't feel so bad anymore. But when it happened, it was like, oh my God, I feel like I've just betrayed my friend.
Yeah, but overall, we never, I mean, I actually get excited when we go to these talks. And I'm like, if you guys can ask a question that we haven't heard before, I will be stoked. Like, come up with like your most deep cut that you can come up with. Like, I like getting triggered into memory lane so that, because, you know, until somebody kind of gets you to remember, oh, that time that you guys made a machine gun out of champagne bottles, I might totally forget about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's those times where somebody does come up and asks, so what, when you did that, how, what, the result was this, well, how did you guys come up with that? And I'm like looking at him like a deer in headlights going, what are you talking? I can't remember. I have to go back and rewatch it. Sorry. But I like that question. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for sending that in. And please keep those video questions coming in. We love them.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, for sending in the video question. And if you guys want to be a part of the show, please continue to send us your video questions. You can go to mythfitspodcast.com and send it to us there. Or, of course, we're on all the socials, Instagram. Please like, subscribe, follow, do all the things so Tori and I can keep talking to interesting people like Thomas.
Yeah, and keep sharing. You guys have been so supportive, and we love you guys. And it's just fun watching this thing grow, and I'm just happy to be a part of that.
Thanks for being a Mythfit. Stay weird. With that, Mythfits out.
Pioneer.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.